How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And for those who may not know, SDHAM is the morning show that is attached to the SDH Network. And it can be found on all of the social media that is attached to Soccer Down Here as a handle. And what we do from 9:05 a.m. Eastern Time, from 11:05-ish and beyond, Monday through Friday, is we take you through everything you need to know in the world of soccer, whether it's Major League Soccer, it's overseas, it's news, it's pundits, it's experts, and everything going on. Since our base of operation is in Atlanta, we do talk a lot about Atlanta United over the course of a week. And this week on the show, we had our share of experts that were looking backward at match week number 2 in Major League Soccer for 2026, and then working our way forward into match week number 3, and the conversation did pop up a couple of different times. And so what we've decided to do this time around is let you in on those conversations that you can find live on our YouTube channel, on X, and on Twitch. And then the audio is then turned later on in the day, and you can set it to your favorite podcatcher, set your notifications for Soccer Down Here, and then when those conversations with those individuals pop up, you get those as well. So you can listen to the show live, you can watch the show live, you can be a part of the show live through our Twitch pitch, or you can take it in its chunks and you can sit there and go, okay, I want to listen to this pundit, I want to listen here, I want to listen here, and you can do that throughout the week. And so this week, we decided to look back at match week number 2 with Atlanta United and San Jose Earthquakes. Our friend Casey White with Apple TV, she came in and is with us Tuesday mornings at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. We go over her match in Major League Soccer, and through her analytical eye and through her coaching eye, we go over the instances in the match that need their attention, her perspectives on it, and what we learn along the way when it comes to her coaching eye and what we need to be looking at in these moments for the two teams that she's covering. And then after that, it's an opportunity to move forward two times on SDHAM. And we caught up with our friend Landon Southwick, who is in the booth for Real Salt Lake. And he has seen everything from the Monarchs' perspective, and now he is part of everything with the first team. And he gave us his intel about what happened last week with RSL knocking off Seattle for the 15th year in a row in Rio Tinto, and then kind of what to expect going forward for 2026 and what he was anticipating for the matchup coming up against Atlanta United on Saturday night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And then we wrap up with one of the gentlemen who is going to be calling the match for Apple TV, our friend Miguel Gallardo, based in Orlando, known to Orlando City, and is beloved there. And we got to catch up with him. He'll be on the call with Ramsey Sandoval on the Spanish language broadcast. And so we got his perspective on not only Atlanta United and the matchup upcoming with RSL, but since he's based in Central Florida, what happened the week before with the purple team, Orlando City, and what happened when you had a 2-0 lead and it didn't finish that way. So we get his intel on Atlanta and RSL and Orlando City. But without further ado, we go to our leadoff hitter this week on the Best of SDHAM, Casey White from Apple TV, to find out what she thought about San Jose and Atlanta's road trip out west. Time to catch up with KCD, because we know what KCD, where she be. She'd be back from her Orange Fitness Theory, the Minnesota Aurora.
I'm rocking it today.
Wow. Well, now, all right. So is there a connection, or did you just, much like me, it's just cool gear?
It is cool gear, I will say that, but there is a connection. Andrea Yock is a good friend. Okay. Met her along the way through Jamie Watson, who I went to college with. And so, you know how the soccer world is. You just meet people, and met her. My sister lives in Minnesota and her family. So I actually got to tour Minnesota Aurora when I flew up there and got to see Andrea. So definitely an exciting club for sure.
So you went to school with Jamie?
Yeah, we went to Carolina together.
Okay, so all right. So next time Jamie comes on, I have to give him grief about that. All right, that's cool. That's good intel to have.
You should give me grief about that. I was a year older than him in school. That could be a fun like triple interview. Well, you never know.
Okay, so that's a bet. So when we can get Jamie to come in on a Tuesday at 9 o'clock his time, because he lives in Nashville, yep. And he has, I think, like, he has, I forget if it's a train. I think he has a train that goes through his backyard at points, because you can hear the train whistle. Literally, he'll be out on his lanai out back when he'll be talking to us when he's not inside, and you'll hear a train go by, or you'll hear like construction or yard work or something. And so literally, so yeah, when we can get Jamie in to do a three-way dance in this segment, but he's got to come in your segment. We're not going to steer it to where you have to parachute in for one of his. He's got to come in here Tuesday at 10 to talk about
that. And we are Orange Theory buddies / competitors, so we can bring that up too. But yes, it can be fun. So we'll do that one of these days.
Yes, three-way dance with you and Jamie. So that's very cool. Okay, Dave Leno is going to be seeing San Jose coming to Philly.
Right.
And what we have kind of got with our format here, Allie Curtis from the president of MLS Next Pro joining us at the bottom of the hour. So what we've decided to do this season in our incredibly long executive meetings for this segment is go over the goals that were scored in your match with you and Christian and kind of break down what you saw, because one, San Jose is heading to Philly. Two, Atlanta's coming home, and so now folks are getting to see Atlanta for the first time this year. Before we get into the goals, overall assessment of what you saw from San Jose and Atlanta on the weekend.
Well, I'll first say I just expected more in general from Atlanta United. I thought it was a really tough performance for them. But a lot of that, too, for San Jose, they started so quickly. There was a lot of attack, a lot of runs forward, good pressing. They just looked way more energetic at the end of the day. And you know me, I can break it down into a million other things, and we probably will here today. But ultimately, from just an energy perspective and an intentionality perspective, San Jose dominated.
Yes. And Madison Cruz and I had pre and post on local radio, and so we were watching all of that for 90 minutes as well. So first moment that we'll get into is obviously goal number one. And because, you know, when two goals are scored, you have to start with the first one. So early on, Preston Judd ends up being the benefactor. We're going to play the call that you and Christian had on Apple TV. So this is courtesy of Apple TV and Major League Soccer.
It's a side that's really trying to stabilize things at the back, like San Jose. This Atlanta United side conceded 63 goals last year. And they've coughed it up once again. It's Jamar Ricketts looking to pounce, pulls it across. Judd! Oh, yes! Seismic for Judd! 2-2!
In front of goal. It's a turnover in the buildup. But what I liked from Ricketts was that he didn't even think about dribbling forward. He takes one touch. He goes right away. I'm going to take you on the 1v1. Sanchez not able to catch him. And then it's a delicate ball. That is a very difficult header because there's not a lot of pace on this. But it's textbook as Preston Judd clicks it on, gets it straight down, and almost impossible to save.
You are not kidding with that with Lucas Hoyos. And it starts with Hoyos pressured, trying to play out from inside of his own six. And as we were looking at it, and like I said, you can correct me and, you know, hit me over the head if I'm wrong, but it looked like Hoyos's outlet to Cooper Sanchez had too much on it, and it was too far away from him to get to. And then it was easy for Ricketts to pounce on, and then everyone at that point is chasing Ricketts with the cross, and it was deflected, and Preston Judd was there for the slam dunk. What did you see?
What happens in that moment of buildup when there's something that goes technically wrong? Because ultimately, he had Sanchez as an outlet. He missed it. He absolutely missed it. So when that happens, everyone around you immediately goes into chase mode. And you somewhat forget as a player, you shouldn't, but you do. It's natural. like, where do I need to be? And you kind of freak out a little bit. Like, I've got to recover. So Sanchez is chasing, but Jamar Ricketts takes one touch, puts his head down, goes right at him to get in the box. Sanchez can't recover. So he goes from an attacking body position to a defending body position. And then two players are drawn out to recover. So then Preston Judd is between the two center backs. So when Mihai gets pulled over into that space, and also Baez, better call, has to come over and get tight to Judd. But that is all happening so incredibly quick. Yeah. And you're in this expansive attacking shape, not thinking that your goalkeeper is not going to be able to execute that pass. So you're just in recovery mode. But credit to San Jose. But it really was about Atlanta United. It all went wrong in a moment of buildup.
Yeah, and at the same time, you are with a back line that, to a certain degree, in the midfield, missing pieces and still trying to get acquainted with each other. Elias Baez is your left back, trying to figure out, okay, what do I need to do to assist Barakal and Mihai in these situations, just in normal game state, not in, oh, my God, I've got to recover state and I've got to rush over and be a part of things. So, you know, match week two, you're still trying to get acquainted with what the keeper wants to do with the weight of a pass, going back to what we were talking about last week. How's it going to be delivered on this surface? And Oyos was having problems on the surface at PayPal early on, and it created a lot of early issues for him.
It did. And excuse me, I meant Hernandez, not Baez. So thank you for pointing that out. Yeah. Yes, and the thing that Tata Martino said to us, and I think he has said over and over, is that they want to be a build-out team. They want to outpossess teams. But early in the season, you have to figure that out with different units, and there's going to be mistakes. So if you're going to be a build-out team, your recovery from turnovers and counter-pressing and how you organize has to be really important until it gets more efficient. But San Jose's defensive shape, they put two up on the center backs in their pressing shape. So immediately, Oyos does not have those simple options. So now he has to figure out how to find the outside backs, or he has to have those breaking line passes through the midfield. That's a little bit more scary. And if you're technically off, it's going to set the attack for the other team. That's what happened on this goal. But it also happened, to your point, multiple times, because no one was really able to figure out how to get past that pressing shape.
Yeah. And it took putting the thinking cap on to try to figure that out. And also, you don't have Alexei Miranchuk as your point guard because he's still trying to get into 90 minutes fitness. And so you're trying to take your pieces that you have, still be who you are, and going up against the challenges that the opposition knows that they can pounce on you in these certain situations. Am I off here?
No, you're not off. And I was a coach that I love to build out of the back. And so I feel for these moments, because when you're having your players do it, there are going to be mistakes. You hope they don't turn into goals at the professional level. You hope that doesn't happen. But if that is going to be your team profile, you encourage your players to do it. And you say, you can do this. You can get out of this. You can make that extra pass to shift players. It is all about when you do it, though. And there are times, and I even said it once on the broadcast, I think going into the second half, it was almost screaming for just a diagonal ball to turn the backs of the San Jose Earthquakes back line. But that's not the player profiles overall that Atlanta has, especially in that game up top, besides the Lotte Lot, who was being forced to come back. So I think that Tata Martino is going to keep pushing them to do this. It's just a matter of what pieces are in there to help them get through the pressure. And San Jose is a quick team.
Yes.
One of the more athletic teams. So it was highlighted, I think.
Yeah, and one of the things I want to get into Tata Martino and what he wants from his club after we play the second goal and talk a little bit about it. Obviously, you're down a goal, you're chasing, and game's going to get stretched a little bit. Some dude that we've heard of came in with about 30 to go. I thought it might be closer to 15 to 20. Yeah. Some dude comes in and he turns into that instant catalyst. Goal number two for San Jose, courtesy of Apple TV and Major League Soccer.
Honestly, I don't think it's that bad for the San Jose Earthquakes because they have the counter-attacking ability.
And hard charging Timo Werner on that opposite side. Werner! It's in! Buddha time from Timo!
The San Jose Earthquakes in attack. That underlap stopping run from Skane. Look at the awareness to know that the space is behind the back line. Timo Werner takes that quick little look over his shoulder. It looks like he's going to go in the 1v1, but the angle is all for Mihai. He sees that little look out of the left eye there and finds Buda coming and crashing into the penalty area. Well done on a bouncing ball to run through the back of the net and make sure it goes across the end line.
All right, break this one down for us. For me, it was a transition opportunity because, once again, Atlanta United's chasing. Down the right-hand side, Timo Werner shows why he can be the dangerous individual that he can be. Interesting point that you made about Mihai during the play. Okay, break this one down for me.
We were talking earlier, because just before this, Atlanta was starting to get a little bit of the play, and it was starting to get a little higher up the field with the ball and make San Jose defend, and it was starting to get stretched a little bit more. The game was. And I was, right at the beginning of that call, I was basically saying, usually it's good for the team that's not up to have the game stretched. But for San Jose, who has the pace and the timing of runs in behind, it actually wasn't so bad for them either. And then this goal happened because both Berkal and Mihai were back. But when Skane got the ball, he realized it was a 2v2. At the back. And so he sprung Timo Werner into that outside channel. Timo Werner looked like he could take on in the 1v1, but Mihai had a really nice recovering angle to cut off Timo's ability to go to goal, unless he cut in completely on his left foot. Yeah. But if he had done that with the angle of approach from Mihai, it would have taken him away from the 18 rather than into the 18 to beat Mihai. So I thought this was a really intelligent decision from Werner to just take a look over his shoulder, play the ball behind the back line of the defense, because you put a defender in such a compromising situation because they're facing their own goal. So they either have to let it go or they take the chance of having an own goal when they try to clear it. And Buda was the recipient of that. So there was a lot in this goal that I really liked. And it was in the context of what was happening happening tactically as well.
All right. So with Atlanta United getting to come back home, taking on RSL, and I know this is literally just looking at 90 minutes and all the game tape that you've stared at, what have you seen from Atlanta United so far in the match and the highlights that you've seen? What are your takeaways right now from Atlanta United in 2026?
The thing that stands out to me, and this really isn't a surprise, is when Moranchuk comes in, they've been better. And I don't – sometimes when you bring someone in – and I know he's not at his 90 minutes, but when you bring someone in late in games, the game's a little more open or they've been able to watch and find spaces so it can be a different type of role. But with him coming in and the other substitutes, I just felt like there was a little bit more control of the game. I made a note of this in the game that – when Jakob went to right back, they got him extremely high and they stayed with the other three a little bit lower. And then Moranchuk was able to go centrally. So they're created like this 4v3 in midfield with, and then Almiron and Lapelat were operating more up top. It just seemed like they made it a little bit harder on San Jose when they had the ability to have Moranchuk on the ball and Almiron. I just think it feels like the midfield, not midfielders. I want to make that clear. The middle third of the field, they need to control that a little bit more. And having the personnel to get on the ball, I think he helped that in that game.
And you know, to me, what I liken that to, when you send one of your outside backs forward, it's like you're taking the dial on an old radio, it's like the old stereo receiver, mm-hmm. and you kind of turn the dial like one notch. That means that everything rotates that one way, so your left back and your center backs go back and help out that space that's taken up by the right back or whatever back is going forward. Everyone rotates that one place over, and since you have two sixes, one of them can help out and the other goes into attack. And so that's where your cover comes from if you end up with someone like double nickel 55 going forward to help things out offensively. And so that's the best way that I can describe what I think is happening in that kind of a moment. Am I off?
No, you're not off. I think there's a lot of positives. Another positive on top of that is that it's risk versus reward. So the way I look at this is, if you have a higher starting position in your attack, if you do lose the ball, your distances are closer to win it back and you're pressing higher up the field. So I always say this because I'm an NFL American football fan as well. It's like, it's about gaining territory sometimes. Sometimes you just need to get everyone higher up the field. And if you look at the flip side of it, DeJuan Jones and Benji Kakanovic for San Jose, they risk. They flew forward, they pressed, and they reaped the benefits of that. Atlanta did start to do that in the second half more, even with Hernandez still in there. But it's just hard because they kept getting caught between, do I go to DeJuan Jones or do I stay with Jamar Ricketts? And that's the hard part. But for Atlanta United, the second half, I think that was one of the positives, was getting Yacob a little bit higher to allow for that.
One of the tenets that Tata Martino has talked about going into this season, and he may have divulged it when you had your pregame talk, is the idea of playing, basically playing bravely. Mm-hmm. And not, he wants everything to be forward. I want you to be aggressive. I want you to be the protagonista, which may have come up in your conference call, that particular word. Mm-hmm. When you're a protagonista, what he is looking for is that push. He wants you to be aggressive. He wanted Cooper Sanchez after match day one against FC Cincinnati. Look, you did great, but I need you to go forward and be more aggressive in that. And if you make mistakes, I want you to make mistakes going forward and being aggressive, like you talk about flipping the field and, you know, being an American football fan. It's almost like, you know, punting to flip the field for field position kind of a thing. So when you're being brave and you're pushing forward, how difficult is that mentally when your default at times is you're afraid to screw up? You don't want to make a mistake because you don't want to get deeper into a hole. How difficult is navigating that whole idea of, I want you to play bravely, I want you to be aggressive, but your default says, okay, I don't want to make things worse. How difficult is that to manage?
It can be hard. I think it depends on personality, natural personality, whether you have fresh starts and you think, if I just keep the ball and don't make a lot of mistakes, like I'll stay in this starting 11, or actually that can work against you sometimes because there's not as much impact. And it depends on the position you're playing. Mm-hmm. I think trust is huge with managers and players as well. So as managers and coaches are telling you, you can play forward, you can make mistakes, then they have to know that mistakes could happen. And then you have to trust that you're not going to be pulled. But also you've got to have the pressure of performing. So there's so many nuances of that that play into your head mentally as a player. But I do think one thing Tata Martino said to us is that having a build-up style of play takes patience, it takes repetition, and it takes time. And he's right. It's not going to be perfect right away. But if he can instill the confidence in the players to break lines, to not only keep it, but look to be dangerous in keeping it, then it's ideal for players because you feel this freedom to do so. Right now, we're just not seeing that necessarily happen. I do have to say this, though. Hoyos obviously gave up that ball for the goal. Mm-hmm. It can't happen. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say this. Mm. The amount of attackers that were above the ball versus the amount of defenders that were there, that goal should not have happened, in my opinion. You still had your four backs that were able to recover in, and you had Cooper Sanchez falling with one attacking player in the box in Preston Judd, who was wide open. So, yes, a lot does go on Hoyos in this build-up play, and you have to connect those passes, but you also have to know how to recover if there are human mistakes that happen. And I think that was a team thing also that needed to be addressed.
Yeah, and so right now Atlanta United waiting for RSL and a bunch of youngins to come in on the weekend, taking care of business against Seattle. Do you know where you are going to be next week?
I do. I have St. Louis, Seattle, and I will be in St. Louis for that game. So I have never been to Energizer Park, so I'm very excited about that. And will be a good matchup. They both came off losses, so I assume a hungry matchup between these two teams.
Okay. With St. Louis City, I feel like you have to say City, you know, in all caps. Right. You've got a team that doesn't have one of their main guns. Joao Klaus was traded for intra-league dollars to LAG, and you're kind of wondering where the offense is going to come from St., you know, for St. Louis. It's probably from for St. Louis as opposed to two froms. Shows you how much caffeine I've had this morning. And Seattle coming off of a loss to RSL, 15 years in a row that they have lost at Rio Tinto, which is crazy for me to think about. So you have a team that likes to clamp things down defensively and a team that when healthy has firepower that's there. You don't know what Jordan Morris's status is, probably another couple of weeks, And so you've got these contrasting ideas that you get to be a part of coming up on the weekend. What else struck with you from this past weekend in Major League Soccer coming forward before your visit to St. Louis?
Well, you know, you said it right there. You know I love contrasting ideas because that means tactically I can just get after it. So I'm excited about that. Harbaugh was missing versus San Diego for St. Louis City, which was a big loss on the attacking side because, to your point, their attack is a little bit different, and it was hard for them against San Diego. They pressed well, but San Diego just looked so sharp. Mm-hmm. Their build-up play, we know, is incredibly efficient. So that was a difficult task. And I was a little surprised by Seattle losing to RSL. They looked like they were flying in week one, even with the Morris injury and him going out with Rothrock, coming into the game. Oh, I got to get that like off the
Rothrock. Top. Rothrock. Take your time with it. Take your time with it. Paul Rothrock.
Oh, goodness. I've called their games before, too, and it was fine. So we'll see what happens this weekend. So I think that will be a fun matchup. I like the way Yon Dame has St. Louis City organized. I think they look like they're organized well in the press. Like, where are the goals going to come from? Betcher is industrious. I like him. And I think the partnership with Hartle is – it's better when he's on the field with Betcher. So I think that's a big thing as well for St. Louis City. Man, this last weekend was fun. I got to watch a lot of games. I was sitting in the hotel. I was on long flights. I can't not mention Orlando City or Miami because it was so fun. I was on the plane, like, throwing my hands in the air. Like, every time a goal happened, I think people thought I – with problems. I was not having problems. I was excited about just all the goals were really nice. I mean, there were two that were probably savable, one for each. But overall, it was an entertaining game and a little spice for Messi as well. You don't see that very often.
Well, yeah, but when you step on Superman's cape, you're going to get that kind of stuff.
It's you want
an autograph now?
Everyone that knows me is like, I'm kind of quiet with that stuff. Like, I'm not a big, like, instigator type, but I was loving that. I actually loved it. And not because it was messy, I don't think, maybe, but he just never does that. And so with everything going on, a rivalry game, I was getting into it for sure.
All right. What I will do is I will send you some, how much time are you going to have before the match in St. Louis to kind of sample and see what's going on?
A decent amount. I think I get in at like 4:35 p.m. on Friday, and our game's not till 7:30 Central on Saturday. So I've got a lot of Saturday, but I'm out quick on Sunday.
Okay, so what I'll do is I will send you intel about places to eat because there's a lot to do and there's a lot of different nationalities that you can sample. I will send you some history about where Energizer Park is. I will send you stuff on food because St. Louis is a true food diaspora, and I went ahead and broke out that word.
I love that word, and I would love that because I have not been to St. Louis in I don't know how long, so I am not aware at all.
All right. Well, I will send you all of our Cliffs notes when it comes to going to eat and everything there. As always, KCD, it's great to see you. Have a great call. Be safe. Enjoy St. Louis City and Seattle, and thanks for the intel on Atlanta United, especially out of the blocks at 0-2. We will catch up with you again next week. Great to see you, my friend.
Sounds great. Good to see you.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Always great to catch up with KCD and find out what is on her mind on a weekly basis when it comes to Major League Soccer. You're listening to the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Next up, we go forward. We move into Atlanta United's matchup with RSL. And for that, We check in with someone who was actually in the Mountain Time Zone when we had him on the show, and it was live. It was not on tape. We find out why that is with early wake-up calls. It's our friend Landon Southwick from the RSL Network. We find out what's on his mind with RSL early in 2026 as they're now heading into Match Week 3. You are up early this morning because, and for those that get their time zones all mixed up, you're only two behind, but you're still two behind in the East Coast, man. That's an early wake-up call.
You know, thanks for having me on first off, but I got little kids. I mean, we're rolling at 6:30 sometimes at my house, getting a bowl of cereal and going.
So are you getting the bowl of cereal and going, or are you doing it for them? How is
them.
This? Okay, just checking.
I'm a cereal guy though, but I made a deal with my wife this year or this month that I was going to not eat cereal all month.
What?
So yeah, I don't know. It's working though. Trying to lose some of this stomach dad bod going on.
You gave up cereal?
That's apparently she convinced me. That's my go-to as well. Oh. So we're all good.
Okay.
I got granola bars and Built bars. We're doing good.
Okay, just checking. What we do here whenever we can kind of grab folks by the tail is we have opposition research, and we like to try and reach out to folks in the markets where matchups with Atlanta, since Atlanta United is in the heart of our footprint, and RSL's coming. And so that's why I grabbed you and tried to grab your comment by the tail to hang on to you for a couple of minutes here to talk about everything RSL. And I can't thank you enough for getting up early and having your granola bars to hang out with us.
We're good.
Okay.
We're good. I'm just excited to be hanging out with you, John. So,
I mean, it's been entirely too long, my friend. It's great to see you. So let's get into the RSLian discussion. And when you look back at the 25 year, and you're looking into the 26th year, what were some of the big thoughts coming out of 25 that everybody was having in their brains and on their shoulders coming into the 26th season?
Yeah, great question. From the standpoint of RSL fans in general or here in the state, there's been a real resurgence on the sports scene. You may be taking notice, we're prepping for an Olympics here in 2034. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of support statewide for sports in general. And it used to be the Miller family that just dominated the sports scene in Utah, owning the Jazz and Larry H. Miller, who's since passed. His wife's taken over ownership on that side, Gail Miller. And they've really kept Utah sports on the scene. The Jazz have had their years. They've struggled as of recent. They've been fined by the NBA for tanking and every fun element that's there going on right now. And what's happened with that is the Millers ended up selling to Ryan Smith, and Ryan Smith got in the sports scene. And what's happened again on the Jazz side, sorry. And then on the RSL side, Ryan Smith and the Blitzer Group owned RSL after Deloy Hansen, a guy that owned them for quite a few years here in the state, put in some infrastructure out in Harriman, the training facility. I mean, they did some great things, but there's really a big change happening in this last year. The ownership changed to the Miller family, not back to the Miller family, to the Miller family. And the Miller family is kind of positioning themselves to own Real Salt Lake and then hopefully own a baseball team here in the coming future, trying to get in on that MLB expansion. And then the Smith group, Ryan Smith and his crew owns the Mammoth and the Jazz. So it's kind of splitting into these two ownership groups. And a lot of people had questions what the Millers would do when they took over RSL coming into this season. Spending was always a concern and always has been a concern at RSL. Like, are we willing to put out some money? And the Miller family responded resoundingly yes. Purchased one of the highest DPs in RSL's history with Morgan Gilavogi. They spent on a number of other players. And then they've invested in the academy. And there's things happening at the academy level. This past week, we saw a couple 18-year-olds and a 17-year-old start. And there's just a lot of that happening right now. And so from 25 to 26, there was a real question mark. And after the first game in Vancouver, RSL lost 1-0, played a very young roster with five homegrowns ultimately in the game. And now at this point, beating Seattle 2-1 at home, that kind of started making people go, something happening here in Utah. Is this youth resurgence going to provide big dividends? I mean, we're seeing it in New York. Red Bulls kind of have some stuff going on as well. And I think it's a very interesting thing to be looking at this RSL side saying, well, you know, a smaller market team, they can compete.
And you can, and it is up to you how you wish to compete. And that's what one of the things that we always try to sit there and remind everybody is that just because you might look at what's going on in Fort Lauderdale, if that's not your way and you can't keep up with that, then don't do that. And don't get yourself locked into the idea of, oh, they're doing it, so therefore I have to. And you mentioned the baby bulls with what we're seeing with Michael Bradley, and everybody was poo-pooing that. It's like, what are you doing with all these kids? And it's like, well, you know, I kind of coached them last year, you know? So that knowledge base is there. And for RSL, it's been a way to build that way as well, coming through the academy. And so, and Pablo Mastroianni, the head coach, he can sit there and say, yeah, I've seen them grow to X point, and I feel like they're ready to come in. I mean, you had, I think it was, what, 14 exits of various folks in the offseason. And then you mentioned everybody that you bring in, Kobe Henry, Chance Cowell, Zach Booth, all the homegrown signings, all the folks that come in through the draft, Lucas Engel from Middlesbrough. I feel like I have to ask him, but it's not Middlesbrough, but it's Bruh. You mentioned Gila Vogi. You have Juan Manuel Sanabria coming in from Atletico San Luis. I mean, this was – I feel like there's roster chaos, but really was it roster chaos when you brought in all of those folks and jettisoned who you did coming into 26?
No, I think a lot of people see it as the quick, we threw the bathwater out and everything's gone. And how are we going to survive? How are we going to get through? The reality of things was it was pretty calculated. You kept some of the core people that have been around for many, many years, a Justin Glad, who interestingly enough is only 29 years old, but in his 11th season with RSL, and you move to a three back. Moving into a new formation, a 3-5-2, which has kind of changed some of how we as a club kind of see things, or as fans see things, because that's very unique. But with the likes of Rafael Cabral in goal, he's keeper of the week again. He's done that many, many times. He played all 40 plus games last season, every minute of every game, 3,600 minutes. He's an iron wall, does everything he needs to do in back, and it's given RSL the ability with his Brazilian flair and a sweeper keeper style to be able to play with a three back. And, you know, DeAndre Yedlin came in, he got injured, but so didn't play last week, but came in. Lucas Engel, there's guys that are capable of getting up and down the flanks, and it's going to be really interesting because this whole roster turnover ended up being very calculated. And I think the midfield is going to be one of those strengths for RSL. Unfortunately, you know, they've had some injuries, visa issues still. I mean, it's not a full strength RSL side, and we will not see that full strength RSL side this weekend. It's getting there every week. And I think that's the key to that, is taking a step forward every week for this RSL side.
I know that having someone like a Rafa Cabral probably drives you a little nuts in the booth, considering his, the only thing missing at times for Rafa Cabral is a pith helmet and machete.
Yeah.
We're going through, you know, and he's just sitting here going like this through all of the forest. Six saves last week, goals prevented according to SofaScore to 1.64, four saves from inside the box, one punch cleared, two runouts on the day. Then defensive contributions, he obviously had the three clears, eight recoveries. So busy day with Rafa, and it seems like when he's on, forget it.
Yeah.
And but then if there's that wobble in there somewhere, then it's like the two sides of Rafa Cabral. Am I wrong?
Yeah, he really is. He's more on than ever off. I mean, the reality is he is incredible. I think he's gotten left out to dry many times by his defense. And I think that's where you ever see the cracks in the armor for him is defensively just very poor. I mean, the goal they gave up against Seattle was an unmarked header inside the six. There was nothing Rafa Cabral was going to do to protect that and stop that. And it's one of the challenges with zonal marking and some of those positional battles that teams often kind of plan on the training grounds, and it doesn't execute super well on the pitch. But what was really cool, I mean, is he came up time and time again, and that RSL side dominated Seattle. And Seattle's a very talented team, a perennial. And the week before, I mean, they lost 1-0 to Vancouver, who had just been in the MLS Cup the year before. I mean, up in BC Place on some of the worst turf in the country, in both countries, I should say. And he was the guy that kept that team in there many times. And Rafa Cabral, his style is very unique. He's Brazilian. He's not always super vocal, but he is always there. And he's the type of guy that's swatting balls away, doing everything, the little things that need to be done.
And you mentioned obviously the injuries and what you've seen. I saw this, and I have to consult you as my RSL oracle here. 15 years in a row, Seattle and the Riot. Did I see that right?
So the number is officially, I'm gonna check my old game notes from Saturday. It's now 14 wins, one loss, four ties against Seattle on Utah soil, and they have not won in a regular season game since 2011. And it's something wild because there's a lot of transplants. I mean, I spent some young years growing up in Seattle. I've even got a kid with the middle name Griffey. If I turned my screen slightly, you'd see Ken Griffey Jr. on my wall. To that level of love for that, but I have no love for the Sounders, and nor does any Utah fans on this side. It's a pretty heated rivalry. It's not one of those that turns into a clash of heads where they battle and it's feisty and everybody gets, you know, crazy. But it is a very good soccer every year, and it's wild. It's had its years of craziness. Seattle won, or RSL one time went to Seattle and won 1-0 without registering a shot on goal. And you know, and it's, there's just crazy things that have happened. RSL's only title back in the day in 2009 was in Seattle at Lumen Field. They beat the Galaxy at Lumen Field. So there's been this weird like magnetization between these two teams always coming together. But I don't know what it is. The Rave Green cannot win in Utah, and it has become a riot, a fortress again for RSL there. And that was a mantra back in the CONCACAF days when RSL had their run of Jason Christ and all those wonderful players. And it's becoming there. And you know, there's some talent that we've yet to see to even play a part in some of those things. I mean, we're not even talking Diego Luna, who might make the World Cup squad. And there's guys like him that have not even been talked about or featured at this point in the season. So,
yeah, our Jarrett Smith, by the way, has relocated from SDH footprint, and he's now part of he has now established SDH Mountain Time Zone. He is now out there in your part of the footprint. So we're looking to have him latch on to everything out there with Monarchs, yeah, RSL, and Royals and everything. In a perfect world, everything being equal, which it has not been so far, what is the starting 11 of starting 11s that folks would have been counting on if everyone was healthy? And then I'll get into the reasons why and what it's been looking like the last couple of weeks.
You know, there's a lot to be said to that perfect starting 11, because I think some of that will remain to be seen who really steps up, because there's guys like Aiden Hezirkani who scored, who I would have never put in an ideal starting 11 for RSL.
Really?
At his age, 17 years old, former Monarch, played 47 minutes of MLS football until this year. And now he's started two straight games and has been very active in those games. I wouldn't have put him in a starting 11, but now I think I have to. And, you know, over the weekend, Ari Piol, the starting forward for RSL, looks like he tore out his Achilles. So he'll be probably out for the season. But that formation is going to come somewhat to the likes of Rafa Cabral in goal. In the back, you'll have a Lucas Engel, Justin Glad, depending if who's healthy. At this point, you'll probably see a Philip Quinton on the outside as well. And in the midfield, it gets a little interesting. You've got the likes of Xavier Gozo, who is someone to keep an eye on. If you've, thought, you know, Diego Luna was interesting, keep an eye on Xavier Gozo. I think he's got a lot to give. We've seen kind of some sitting players in Noel Kaliskan and Lucas Moisa, the 17-year-old. I don't know that that's the ideal, but I think you'll see that for a little bit. Pablo Ruiz stepped in as well. And then in front of them, in some form, you'll see a Xavier Gozo. I think you'll see a Diego Luna right there, and that would be the ideal. And then on the outside, you'll see another player named Juan Manuel Sanabria. Mm-hmm. And from everything I've seen, he got the assist last week. He is a wizard on set pieces. So I haven't seen that in a game yet, but man, I cannot wait to see what he brings there. And then up top, you know, I'm sticking with Aiden Hezirkani and then Morgan Gilavogi. He came on for, I think, 15 minutes or under 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And in one of his first touches, he set up what should have been the ultimate nail in the coffin for RSL. And if you have not seen what he's capable of doing, he is impressive. And I think RSL could be very dangerous with some of those assets. And there's other players I'm not even talking about, which is wild. And RSL, I think, has been deep over the years. This could be a pretty deep roster for this team.
Yeah, our buddy Landon Southwick, play-by-play, the dulcet tones, the golden pipes for RSL, hanging out with us here on the morning show for Oppo Research as RSL gets ready to come here to Atlanta to take on Atlanta United on the weekend. And the youth movement that we're seeing, and, you know, we talked about it with Red Bulls. We see it here with Atlanta United, where you have coaches that are not afraid. If you have someone who's come up through the academy and they're 16, 17, 18 years old, and they're showing you that they're ready-made and the stamp is there, then go ahead and throw them out there with guys like Cooper Sanchez and such. You've seen that, and you mentioned with Hezer Kani that someone who, you know, he can vote, but he can't, you know, he can't do certain things.
Nothing
but he can vote and drive, and that's about it. But getting that kind of that young effort obviously is key to step up because of those injuries, because I think you had – 5 key absences last week, including Luna and DeAndre Yedlin. Having those young guys step up under the age of 22, obviously it speaks to what the academy has been doing and the no fear that Pablo Mastroeni has about throwing in those guys like you were talking about.
Yeah, and it's scary. I mean, if you hear some of the reports, I mean, some of these guys didn't know they were going to start in Vancouver until they got on the airplane. And, you know, and I think some of that's better in a lot of ways, you know, having played. I remember my first collegiate game and moments of feeling that, like, wait, I'm starting, you know, like I'm just a freshman. I'll do whatever I need to do. I want to be on the pitch, but like, really me? And I think some of those guys show maturity beyond their age. And I think that's what's really cool about the professional environment. And you guys see it in Atlanta as well. I mean, it's creating that environment to let players know that the pathway truly is the academy to Monarchs to RSL. And you want to play in that America First field. You want to play in front of the fans. You want to do those things. And, you know, some have different paths. I mean, Taylor Booth's a perfect example. He was an academy player for RSL, was, you know, with the likes of a lot of the players, Brooks Lennon, some of those guys that you guys have seen out and about, Aaron Herrera, Justin Glad, some of this era of guys, and they were going through, and Taylor Booth saw an opportunity to go to Europe, headed to Europe. His brother was in Europe as well. And they're local kids. They're 15 minutes from where I live, you know, and they're just kids that were trying to find their footing, found their footing, got some opportunities in Europe, and are now back home playing in front of their home crowd. And, you know, he's not even under 22 as well, and still has already spent time in Europe and done things. And that's the cool part about what that has created at RSL. We're never going to be the biggest spender, and I think people recognize that here. So we have to be efficient with our academy, and I think a lot of people recognize that RSL spent a lot of time understanding some of the European ways. I mean, RSL, the name Real Salt Lake, comes patterned after Real Madrid and some of the stuff was happening there. And when you look at those elements, I mean, RSL knows they need to build that academy, and it's not going to be a perfect element. They sold a player this from the academy this week into the Nashville system, Will McKay, a keeper. And, you know, those things are going to happen to help build the squad all the way around. And I think it's a really cool era, and I think there's some fun to be had here in Salt Lake here in the near future.
How would you describe Pablo Mastroeni as a coach? And I'm talking personality, stylistics, day-to-day mannerisms, demeanor. Yeah. How would you break down what you get to see with Pablo as a coach?
He's an incredible, passionate guy. I mean, a lot of fans may recognize him as the player when he was the boisterous, you know, hard-headed defensive midfielder for Colorado. I mean, he has got some very heated moments with RSL over the years. He had a video of him taking an RSL jersey and sticking it down his pants. I mean, there's some wild moments out there in time. And when he got brought over into the RSL organization, a lot of people were excited for it, but had questions. Was he capable? And he's made some changeover with his assistant coaches, and there's been some adjustments there. But what's been really exciting is he's the type of guy that brings that passion in both English and Spanish. He's fluent in both. He speaks to his players in both. He does his post game in both English and Spanish at different times. And I think that helps ingrain him with a lot of these players. I mean, a lot of these players speak one of those two languages. Not always the case, but a lot of them speak one of those two languages in some form. And he's the type of guy that's very player friendly. He knows what he's looking for in these players. He's willing to give kids chances. He has worldwide experience. He spent that time on the international level. So he knows what some of these kids' goals are. So when he looks at a Diego Luna, he's developing him to really have that chance at the national level. Not only just thinking small pitcher and that he needs to perform well for RSL, he's giving him that shot to make his name out on the national scene. And I think you'll see that from a number of players this year. And the World Cup may affect a lot of teams in different ways. I mean, Juan Manuel Sanabria is another one that's hoping to make the Uruguay squad. And there's guys like this that are going to take a big chance this year, and he's going to give them the opportunity. Pablo's the guy that is great with the media. He's a walking soundbite all the time. He'll give you good quotes. He'll rub you. He'll have a couple conversations with you. He may even joke with you on those sides. I mean, he's a type of coach that I would have loved playing for in my playing days. I think a lot of people really respect him as a coach, and I think he's done a phenomenal job. And hopefully he can take that next step and lead RSL past just going into the playoffs, but making a run in the playoffs this year.
So when you look at 2026, even though we are now two matches in, and you're dealing with injuries and you're seeing the young guys stepping up and all that kind of stuff, what in your mind when it comes to RSL are you the most confident about when it comes to this team this season? And what still concerns you after two match days, even though you got the result against Seattle that you did?
Yeah, I think the concern is, can this team stay relatively injury-free? I think every team says that, but you know, to look at the roster and say that Diego Luna's been out, I mean, there was a training session 2 weeks ago that four different players got injured in. Mm. A training session, you know? Oh. And not just simple stuff. Olachunji was one of those, got hit in the eye, and he's been out multiple games now. Diego Luna was in that training session. There, you know, that gives me a lot of pause. I think one thing that I can hang my hat on with this RSL team is they're going to have the fight in them, and there's going to be more bite than there has been in recent years with this side. And I think the youth are going to provide some of that bite and some of that energy that maybe this side's been lacking in years past. And that is really exciting. If you're a fan out here West, you know, the West is a tough place to play. I mean, you're never going to compete. And the East has it too. I mean, you're never going to compete with the Miamis and the LAFCs in spending. So what can you do to counter that? What can you do to, you know, match the likes of Messi? And let me just put this straight out. I don't think you can match the likes of Messi, but I think we've learned that you can compete with those guys. And it's not going to be player for player and everything. Sometimes it's going to be grit. Sometimes it's going to be using the youth. Sometimes it's just going to be, you know, a hard fought battle. And I think a lot of these teams are going to learn this year that they've got to do that against those big teams.
My last question before you get to cut the massive promo. Actually, I might have two more. Early study hall for everybody out there getting ready for Atlanta United. What's the early scuttlebutt and the early talk? Is there any?
Well, I mean, I think Atlanta's been more unlucky than they deserve in some of this. I mean, you could probably speak to that way more than I can. Not the start to the season they want.
Right.
They're a talented side, and I think what really has been interesting is as teams go east or west and go from coast to coast, and we're not completely on the coast, but going to the edges of things, I think we've seen teams slip up when they've made those cross-country journeys. So I don't think anything's a foregone conclusion in games like this. I think Atlanta's going to have some challenges with RSL in the midfield. I think there are some interesting things. There's some domination that RSL had at times with Seattle. But I also believe this game is going to have quite a bit of opportunities. Both teams are capable of scoring goals. Both teams are capable of defending. It makes for a pretty good matchup. I think I would say if Atlanta fans are wanting to watch a guy, I would keep a very close eye on some of the youth of RSL. From Aiden Hezirkani to Lucas Moisa, I would keep an eye on some of those guys, whether they play the full 90 or not. Those are guys that I would, you know, be like, okay, I'm going to check that out. And then do not sleep on Xavier Gozo. hasn't scored, didn't score, but he is one of those guys that has speed, has the ability to dance, can do those things, and he is young and talented. So I think those are the things that I would point out from a matchup standpoint. I couldn't be more excited to see what happens this weekend and excited to see how this one plays out, that's for sure.
All right, so for those that want to get their fix other than from our Jarrett Smith, who is now out there and giving us all the intel about everything in the Mountain Time Zone, if they want to keep an ear out and an eye out for everything going on, where do they go? How do they do it? How do they listen to you and everyone else 24/7, 365?
Well, there's a ton of great content out here. One of my favorite podcasts out here, if you want to listen into something, is Bleeding Claret and Cobalt. It's a show hosted by Trey Fitzgerald. He works for RSL and has for the whole history of RSL, really. He took some time off in Europe and has been around. I will not be on the call this weekend, so I get to watch it from my couch. Hopefully, maybe eating a bowl of cereal. I'm just kidding. Don't tell my wife that one. Will be at home watching the game, but David James and Jay Nolly will be on the call. Jay Nolly is a former RSL goalkeeper, spent time with Vancouver. He's been all over the league. He's a couple-time national champion with Indiana Hoosiers. So if you want to follow a guy, he's an interesting one to listen to. And he'll let you know the Hoosiers won the national championship in football this year too. So don't go in deep on that one. He has to own that one. But he has a couple national championships with Indiana and played really well in MLS. And those guys will be on the call. And there's going to be some good stuff from RSL's side. But yeah, I mean, we've got quite a few podcasts around, but Bleeding Claret and Cobalt would be where I would tune in and check things out. I think they'll drop an episode here in the next day or so. Yeah. And then you can always find me on Twitter. If you have questions, I'm always glad to answer things. Always glad to chat with things at Landon Southwick. And yeah, let me know how I can help.
Do you still, did the boss let you, and this is my last question, I promise. Did the boss let you put your Reavers jersey in a frame? Is it there in the house?
It's, you know, it's funny. My Reavers jersey is deep in a bin. We've got an unfinished basement and it will go into a frame at one point. I love my Reaver gear. My favorite one is my Reaver Fever shirt, which seems so silly, but I've got a Reaver Fever shirt, got a jersey from them. And then I finished my career at BYU Hawaii. So living on the North Shore of Oahu, I've got a framed jersey that sits in the basement of that. And
nice.
I spend it's got still volcanic ash, I'm sure, embedded in the jersey of how nasty the clay was out there on our pitch. We were, you know, I was 3 minutes from the ocean, 8 minutes from campus. So it didn't get much better than that playing out in Hawaii and traveling a little bit and having some fun.
BYU Hawaii, Iowa Western, and all points in between.
Yep.
I couldn't resist. And given Feldman all those passes for all those.
You have to. I mean, Iowa Western is a place. I'll admittedly say this. I don't know if I'd ever live there again. Council Bluffs, the wind blows and it is cold.
Mm-hmm.
And you compare that to living in La'ie, Hawaii, and living on the North Shore of Oahu. I mean, it's a no-brainer. So if you get your chance, go to Oahu, check out BYU Hawaii's campus. It is one that is incredibly situated in the North Shore. So
go get your cereal, granola bar, jeez. Unbelievable.
John, I'll eat something good this morning. I'll go get a breakfast burrito or something.
There you go. Good to see you, my friend. Don't be a stranger. You've got the garage door opener. You know how to crash. And if there's anything on your mind, you know that you can come in and we'll talk and we'll have fun. Good to see you, my friend.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week. Hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As always, great to catch up with our friend Landon Southwick, find out what's going on in his mind when it comes to RSL. First two matches of the year, younger faces stepping up, and now what happens in match week three as they make the road trip to Atlanta to take on Atlanta United. This is the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Two guests down, one to go. And for our third guest, it is someone who is known and beloved in Central Florida with his time at Orlando City, and now he's spending time with Apple TV. And it was time to catch up with our friend Miguel Gallardo, find out what's on his mind about his hometown, the team that is based in where the town where he now lives that he spent a lot of time with, what happened with them last week, current state of affairs in his mind. And since he and Ramsey Sandoval are going to be calling Atlanta United and RSL on the Spanish language broadcast on Apple TV, what's going on in his mind with those two clubs? Here's his answers. It is now time to catch up with someone who, last time he was here, he was in an airport. And he was, airports are like in, concrete. And Miguel was trying his damnedest to come up with any kind of a signal to catch up with us from the airport. How are you, my friend?
Hey, Nelson. Good, good, good. It's a pleasure to be here. Wow. Yep, not in an airport, surprisingly. But equally as happy, probably happier to be here with you in a different setting, for sure.
As always, my friend, it's great to see you. And thanks for hopping on as our Friday guest. Obviously, you know that I have to start our discussion with the Purple Team, as it is called here in the Southeast, and what in the wide world of sports happened last week. So I will ask you, sir, quote, what in the wide world of sports happened last week?
Yeah, I'll tell you what happened. The simplest way to put it is Messi happened to Orlando City. Yes, it is true that Orlando City is going through a transitional year, I would say. There's a lot of changes within the club, certainly at the top above Oscar Pareja, the new general manager. Ricardo Moreira is now at the helm and making decisions as to how the construction of the roster looks like. There's a little bit of wiggle room just because you already had your three designated players right on the roster. They decided to loan out Muriel to open up a DP spot. Obviously, there are rumors out there that Antoine Griezmann is coming to Orlando City. I know as much as you do about the situation, but I'm certainly just as excited as everybody for the possibility for someone of his caliber and where he is at his current time. Physically and just soccer-wise, I think he still has a lot to give to the league. But besides that, there wasn't really a ton of wiggle room for Oscar Pareja and Ricardo to work on this season. Obviously, they sold Alex Freeman to Villarreal. They thought they had a backup plan. That didn't pan out through the offseason. They emergency signed Dorsey from the Houston Dynamo, a player that has similar characteristics of what Freeman was providing to the team, which is being aggressive on the right-hand side, being very, very much a two-way defender, making good connections with Pašalić, who's a right winger, likes to come inside, and they need that chemistry and that association on the right hand for the system to work. And then they bring three young Brazilians that it's always a gamble, right? Do they have quality? Do they have talent? Absolutely. They come from playing first team minutes in Brazil. Iago, the center back, maybe not as much because he was playing for such a big club as Flamengo, but you can certainly tell the quality and his physicality, but it's very evident that these players are going to need time to adjust. And so how much patience would the fans have? How much patience will the league has because you cannot be giving up points, especially at home. That those will always come back and haunt you in the end of the season. So, look, it's going to be I suspect it's going to be a challenging year for Oscar Pareja in Orlando City. And in that particular game, second half, they were completely pinned back by Inter Miami. Credit to Mascherano because he recognized what he could do to put a lot of pressure on Orlando City and really take away the ball from them. And when you're Inter Miami and you have the ball, it's just a matter of time before he breaks you down. It's just a matter of time before he gets a moment and very little players in the league are able to do what he can do. Was Kripo liable for the fourth goal? Yes, you can say that. Did it have anything to do with the score? Probably not. But if I could say it in simple terms, what happened was Orlando City is going through a transitional year, and they happened to play against one of the best players that's ever played, who was probably pretty angry because of the result in LA and also some of the things that apparently were said during the match. The last thing you want to do is piss off these guys, because you will feel the wrath.
It literally is like stepping on Superman's cape, because when he broke out the air pen and turned to the bench, I'm like, damn, son. I mean,
yeah.
You don't want to do that. And literally, I just, you know, if this was at Oscar, I don't know who it was on the bench, but you don't do that. And you saw that moment where you're just like, yep, you throw up your hands and you're done.
Yeah.
How much patience, and I ask this kind of as a comparative, how much patience are you willing, or should folks be willing to give a team like Orlando that is in transition? And I bring that up because up here in Atlanta, it's Tata Martino is back. You have new players coming in. You're looking at new players at center back and at wing back and in the midfield. How much patience should fans give these teams that are in transition here as we're only in match week number three?
Yeah, you know what? That's not an answer for me. That's not a question for me to answer. You know, you have to look at the contractual situation of Oscar Pereja. He still has a couple of years, if I'm not mistaken, with Orlando City. How much ambition does the front office, the Will family, show? Okay. If things don't go well, are they willing to part ways? And, in the middle of a contract, that's not cheap. And then who are you going to get that you think is going to be a different maker? And if you think that there's somebody better out there at this particular time than Oscar Pereja, then the answer is it's going to be expensive. It's not going to be just anyone. Like I said, I think there's just a lot of elements here. And I think Oscar Pereja is one of the best coaches in Major League Soccer, certainly one of the most experienced ones since he's been with Orlando City. He's reached playoffs every single year, and you guys in Atlanta know how much Orlando City suffered in the first year. And then he came, he brought stability to the club. They started to accomplish important things like making it to the playoffs every year, winning a US Open Cup, and being a protagonist, I would say, every season. Now, what is the expectation for Orlando City? Is it to continue to be a playoff team, or is it go for the stars and reach for the stars, just like Atlanta United did in the beginning of the franchise history? And listen, you could argue that things, it's inarguable that Atlanta United has not been the best team in the last 2, 3, 4 years, but you cannot argue at their intent. You cannot argue at their ambition, because they're willing to spend, they're willing to break apart processes that are not working, which I think it's something very valuable, right? Other ownership groups may be like, all right, this didn't work out, but I don't really care enough to, you know, to drop a bomb here and then hit the reset button. I think that's brave. And it requires resources, and it requires the ability to spend the money so you can hit a reset. Whether if you get it right or not, I think that's the beauty of the sport, right? Because money does not guarantee anything. And you could argue that FC Cincinnati is in the same situation. I've always thought that if FC Cincinnati doesn't win things, it's a failure because of the money that they spend, the players that they have every single year. So I'm interested to see what the ambition of Orlando City truly is. And so that, I think, answers your question. I don't have that answer. As fans are not patient. Fans are very much, I want to win today. I want to be able to go to the stadium and get a good result. I don't want to be able to go to the stadium and tell my kids or my friends, yeah, well, you know, it's going to take time. It's a process. Trust the process, right? The famous one. But unfortunately for some of these teams that are asking for trust the process, you have teams like LAFC, the beginning of Atlanta United, San Diego, even I would say Nashville, that right from the get-go, they start to win things and they start to be protagonists. And it's like, okay, wait a minute. Where is their trust the process? Because they begin winning right away. And so, again, I'm you know, I'm an Orlando City supporter. I'm an Orlando City fan because I played for Orlando City since the beginning. And how much patience do I have? Look, I trust Oscar Breja to do what he needs to do to turn things around. Is the team constructed the way I think is going to give them success this season? I'm having a hard time believing that. I think there's a lot of holes in the team that need to be fixed, especially defensively. I think they're going to struggle defensively. And look, if they get Antoine Griezmann, okay, yes, he can score goals, he can create. This is hoping that he's an immediate impact, or are we going to ask him for, are we going to give him time so he can adapt to the league? There's always the possibility of, you know, a situation like Insigne, who came from Napoli. He's a proven player, came to Toronto FC, and he was a bust. You guys at Atlanta United know that it's not a guarantee to bring designated players and top-level players and top-dollar players. It's never a guarantee. So in a best-case scenario, Griezmann comes in and he starts scoring goals. He saw some Orlando City problems in the attack. But I would argue that they still have some problems defensively. Robin Jansen is injured. He'll be out for half of the season. He's also not the Robin Jansen that he was 2 years ago. Brekalo was brought a couple of years ago. He spent most of his time playing as a fullback, which I think he did a fine job. Now he's going to have to be a leader in the back line as a center back. And he's paired up with a U-20 Brazilian, you know, national team player. You can say that, but he doesn't have a lot of experience. And what we've seen in the last few games, it's going to take him some time to adjust to the league. And then in the left back, I think they have issues as well. Adrian Marin, I don't think he's shown to be a player that can contain top-level wingers in the league. And they've just debuted a kid, Tahir Reed-Brown, who you can tell he's got quality, you can tell he's got talent, but I think it's unfair to put all that pressure on a player that is just making his debut and go against some of the best players in the league. Because you know as well as I do that the teams spend most of their money and quality wingers and strikers. And so now you're asking a 17-year-old to go against – I mean, imagine this. You're 17 years old. Could be wrong. So he's around 17 years old. And your very first game in Major League Soccer is against Messi and Berterame and Allende. What? How do you sleep the night before knowing that you're going to start – against these guys? Mm-mm. That is a tough pill to swallow. That is a lot to ask from these players. But listen, I personally have patience because I understand what it takes to rebuild a team. But I don't know how much the fans are going to have patience. I certainly don't know how ambitious the front staff is to have difficult decision-making, if things don't go the way they want them to.
Yeah, Tahir Reed-Brown, 19, but still, man, you ain't getting no sleep. It's like I know tomorrow it's going to be it's Rodrigo De Paul, it's that Messi, yep. Dude, it's Suarez, it's Berterame. I mean, Maxi Falcone and his head of lettuce. I mean, it's all there, man. It is all there, and you're lining up and sit there and trying not to be shell shocked. Try to do your job. Try not to sit there and have your eyes wide open the entire time and head on a swivel. You know, I'm giggling like I'm on the field with Messi. Oh crap! He just went past me. You know, having those kinds of moments. Getting into match week three outside of the purple team. What has study hall been like for you getting ready for match week three?
Look, I'm excited for this game. I had the opportunity to call the Real Salt Lake versus Seattle Sounders match up in Sandy, Utah, and I was really impressed with Real Salt Lake, honestly. I think they're going to be a dark horse in the West. When you look at the pieces that they have foundationally, some of the injuries that they are recovering from, yep. Like especially in the middle of the field with Pablo Ruiz, who I think is an underrated player. And look, the story with Real Salt Lake is certainly going to be Diego Luna and Xavier Gozo on the right-hand side, this 18-year-old player who I think is going to be a star. He is already arguably the biggest star in Real Salt Lake when Luna is not playing. Their new designated player, Morgan Gilavogi, looks like the real deal. Mind you, we had 20 minutes of data on him, but every time he touched the ball, he was intentional. He's a big dude that when it comes to the physicality of the league, you know that it's important. So he was shoving people off of him. He was controlling the tempo of the game. He played a beautiful through ball. He had a nice look at goal. When you look at this team, Diego Luna, Gila Vogi, they have that young kid, Hezar Kani, as a dual 10. Olatunji, their striker. I don't know when he's going to be available. I know he had a situation with his eye in the, you know, in the middle of the week. Defensively, you have Justin Glad, who it was surprising for me to find out that he's nominally a designated player, which goes to show you that he's probably a DP that they can buy down if they truly want to invest more. Defensively, you know, he changed the system to a 3-4-3. He's got natural fullbacks as center backs. Could that be an adjustment for them? One of them is Lucas Engel from Cincinnati. The other one is Yedlin, who, you know, made his entire career and money as a right back. And he's played as a wing back for Cincinnati. He's played a little bit of a center back as well. Is that his strong suit, or is that where his evolution is going to take him? I mean, that remains to be seen.
Or is he being hidden because when he's healthy, he's 32?
No doubt. I mean, but I like their guy that they played on the left-hand side, Sanabria. He's coming from Mexico, from Atlético San Luis. He's brothers with Sanabria from LA Galaxy. I think that this is a very complete team, and they beat Seattle Sounders, which it was crazy for me to find out that Seattle Sounders hasn't won in regular season since 2011.
15 years, man.
15 years. That's incredible. So they deserve the win. I think that needs to be said. And so I'm really excited to watch another one of their games, see where this next step takes them, probably with Gila Vogi more involved in the 18 from the get-go, I would imagine, if he was ready to come in 20 minutes. And what I saw from him, I'd be like, yeah, come on, you're starting. That would be my guess. But look, from Atlanta United, it's just been really disappointing. And I've not been shy to say in the last couple of years that every year they are the biggest disappointment. And the reason why I say that is because, look, you can't say that about DC United or Montreal or Colorado Rapids even, you know, at a certain time, because they don't spend as much as Atlanta United does. And so when you look at the caliber man for this team, you realize that the expectations should be very high. And look, I called it last year, and I'm not proud of it, but I just could see things. Last year on our post-game show for the wrap-up in Espanol, El Resumen, they won 3-2 in their first game against Montreal. I don't know if you remember that. And I remember Gio Savarese and Ozzy Alonso, you know, legend for Seattle Sounders and former player for Atlanta United. They were like, oh, yeah, great win for Atlanta United. And I said, is it? Is it a great win? Because what I saw was a team that at home struggled against one of the worst teams in the league, and they were gifted a couple of goals. And to me, that was more of an emotional win rather than an encouraging win, because what I saw was unacceptable from a team that spent that kind of money, that had a championship caliber coach in Ronnie Dyla. And you can talk about everything that went down afterwards, but in that particular time, you expected Atlanta United to be one of the top teams. In fact, I might have put him as a Supporters Shield potential winner. And what I saw from the first 2 to 3 weeks, I thought this isn't going to go well. And so I'm interested to see what Tata Martino can do with this roster. I'm interested to see how these new pieces are going to fit into ultimately supporting the cast of your designated players who haven't done what they have to do or what they need to do based on their price tag and their experience. And look, maybe I'm too raw, but I don't care how bad your team is. You're a designated player, and they spent millions and millions of dollars on you. And if your complaint is that you're not getting enough of the ball, then you shouldn't be a designated player, because you're there to change the game. You're there to impact the game in ways that other players cannot do. And so for me, the biggest job for Tata Martino is, can he get the best out of the designated players? Right. And can the supporting pieces be the appropriate pieces to be able to maximize the production of these DPs? Because, you know, in this league, if your DPs ain't working, you ain't winning. That's just the reality. So We'll see what happens with Atlanta United, but I certainly think that the league is better when Atlanta United is at the top. They're just a big market. It's one of the most beautiful stadiums in the world, which I'm excited to be there this weekend. They have a phenomenal fan base that gets behind the team when the team is winning and demands from their team when the team is losing. And I think that's something that's really special. Hopefully, for their sake, Tata Martino is able to pull out the magic wand, do some stuff there.
Another couple of minutes with you, and I can't thank you for dropping by. One of the things that I was looking at, obviously not knowing injury reports from Pablo, and, you know, because it was five out, he had the young kids in, he won't have Peel because Peel's injury with the Achilles, he's done. And so one of your young striker availabilities is out the door. But I was thinking, looking at the lineups from last week, that if you had Hezirkani and Gozo on the right-hand side, once again, this is assuming no Diego Luna, no Olatunji. If you have Hezirkani and Gozo on the right-hand side, that matchup of those young kids going up against the left-hand side of the defense for Atlanta United, whether it's Alzate or your left-sided six sliding over, Elias Baez and who your left-sided center back is, if it's Barakal or Mihai, whatever that setup is. I'm looking at that 3v2 in there as one of the key things to put in the spot shadow for this one. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's going to be a really interesting matchup there. Gozo is not naturally a wingback. I think he still needs to figure out exactly how that needs to work. I don't think he's a linear player by nature. I think he's more of a central player that, listen, if I'm being honest, I almost think he's being kind of wasted on the right-hand side. And yes, I know that he's had a big impact. And my hope for him is that he continues to grow in that position. But this dude needs more protagonism in the game, right? And I certainly hope that he continues to grow in this role because I do see him more naturally as a more central player. And he has kind of come from the wide areas to the inside. But that's going to be a really interesting battle for Baez, for Alzate, for whoever plays on the right-hand side. Look, I think Atlanta United has an opportunity attacking-wise. If Yellen is not ready, Quinton is not necessarily the most stable or fastest guy in the league. I don't know if he's a starting caliber center back. I think he's a very serviceable player. But the key for Tata Martino is, how are you going to take advantage of that situation? Seattle Sounders tried to do it, putting Rothrock on that side. They thought, if I can get Gozo dragged out and I can get Rothrock in a 1v1 situation with Quinton, I think we're winning there. Quinton did a fine job, honestly. Because Gozo was helping out defensively a lot. So what can Atlanta United do to exploit those situations? Because I think from in other areas of the field, I think Real Salt Lake is pretty strong.
Who's on the call with you? Who are you in the booth with this weekend?
I will be with Ramses Sandoval, just absolute legend. He's just a phenomenal partner. He's a great play-by-play guy, and he's been around the business for a very long time. He's called many games at the Benz before because he's done it at the international level as well. So I'm really excited. Listen, I wanted to tell you something about Atlanta United, and I don't know if you agree.
Okay.
When I look at this team, it's a bunch of players from outside Major League Soccer.
Mm-hmm.
I think Atlanta United is missing MLS experience, MLS pride. You look at that team from 2018, and who were the unsung heroes? It was Parkhurst. It was Laurentiewicz. It was Nagby. It was Guzan. It was Gressel. The list goes on and on. And then you had your designated players who were absolutely fantastic, and that was always a story. But I always feel like as the league continues to evolve, What we cannot lose is that MLS experience, that MLS know-how of the nuances. Mm-hmm. I might even say the MLS pride, because these guys were proud to play for MLS. And what I see in some teams, and I would venture out to say that maybe for Atlanta United, there might be some players that are looking at Atlanta as a place to maybe go somewhere else in the future, or just different mentality, where you had this dude and that they had so much pride for this, not just the team, but the league. And they were such an amazing supporting cast to this big time designated players. And I just feel like Atlanta United has missed out on that in the last couple of years. And I just think that Tata Martino obviously understands that because he had that in 2018.
Right.
I'm curious to see how this roster build is going to evolve, because I do think that they are missing a little bit of that MLS essence that they had in 2018.
Yeah, and with Chris Henderson, who was with him down in Fort Lauderdale, you've got that familiarity that's there as well. Looking to bring in Matias Galarza in short order when everything is there, and now they're linked to a player from Atletico Mineiro in the summer window as well. But no, I've been looking at it from not the MLS veteran standpoint, but I've been looking at it from the academy standpoint, where Atlanta United has a guy like Cooper Sanchez come through. Yeah. We've been center back you and left back you for the longest time. And so you've got this wave of folks that are coming up through the academy that we're looking forward to it with Will Riley in the midfield when he is healthy, Jay Fortson when he is healthy, Matt Edwards now that he is healthy. So I think in lieu of the MLS veteran, you're getting the Atlanta United Academy experience to be a part of that build with the international players and the DP. So it's that and the academy build and not necessarily the MLS vets.
Listen, you have that. And I mean, you have that, for instance, in a team like the New York Red Bull, right? And I think they're kind of changing. I mean, look at that roster, and it's top level international players, MLS experience, and some really,
and the baby bulls, man.
Listen, I think we just figured out the perfect formula on how to win in Major League Soccer. You're welcome, everybody. Go ahead and steal it. Just go ahead and tag us, all right?
Absolutely. It'll be great to see you. When are you flying up? Later this afternoon?
I'm going to fly Saturday morning. It's a short flight. Okay. I like to... Friday nights when I get a chance, I like to go grab dinner with my wife and my kids. It's a great ritual. We go to a Tex-Mex restaurant and, we just really have a good time. And anytime I can take advantage and it's a short flight, they fly early in the morning. And I'm really looking forward because I'm going to meet with Ozzy for lunch. I'm trying to see if I can get together with Rob Valentino, who I think is, an Atlanta United legend. I mean, I just think of Rob Valentino and I think – the knowledge that he must have learning from some really top managers that, okay, they may not have had success in Major League Soccer, but the knowledge is there. And so I just wonder what type of stuff is in Rob Valentino's head from his experience. And I'm really looking forward to tapping into, obviously, finding out and keeping up what's going on with his family. We're really, really good friends. But I'm also interested in see what kind of encyclopedia he's become of coaching and see what I can learn from my guy, because I think he had a great time with Atlanta United and obviously achieved some great things. I gave the people some happy moments in a probably darker time than they wanted to.
Yep, and we need to catch up with him because of the new gig on the business card. We need to find out who's repping the national team. Just get up here safely, please, and we will hopefully see you in the confines, see you up there in the press box, and we'll sit there and shake hands and say hi to you and all that kind of stuff. Thanks for dropping by on a Friday. Can't thank you enough for doing this. Like I said, you've got the garage door opener. You know where the key is under the mat on a Friday. If you want to vent your spleen, last hour of the show, come on in. That's what it's here for.
You're the man, John. All right. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Okay. We'll see you soon.
As always, it's great to catch up with Miguel when we don't have to try and track him down in a cement-encased concourse in an airport. It's always great to catch up with him and pick his brain about everything going on in Major League Soccer, and specifically the matchup at Mercedes-Benz Stadium this weekend. Great to catch up with Landon Southwick and find out everything that's going on at RSL. And always great to find out what's on the mind of Casey White from Apple TV, since, conveniently, she called San Jose and Atlanta United with Christian Miles in match week number 2. She's getting ready for match week number 3. Thanks to all of you for being a part of the best of SDHAM here on from the Soccer Down Here Network. Be sure to like, friend, be a part of the conversation when it comes to all of your social media so you know when we're live, when you know when the content is up and running, and where you can watch it, either or listen to it in full
in chunks, in highlights, in shorts, all over the place when it comes to soccer down here, the SDH Network, and all of our content. So for everybody here at SDH, for Maddie and Sophia, for Nick, for Jarrett, for Jason, for Vanessa, and Drew, I'm just John. Thanks for hanging out with us for the best of SDH AM. Mucha Platio, play it safe. We'll catch up with you next week.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.